You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ermil, credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat. Please make sure to subscribe to the show if you haven't already, wherever you listen to podcasts. The NBA draft is less than a week away, and the Locked On NBA podcast is mock drafting every first-round pick. I made the pick for Miami number 20. Make sure you hear my explanation of the selection and a panel of experts break down if it was the right choice for the Heat. Listen to Locked On NBA podcast every day leading up to the draft to hear projections of every pick and expert analysis from Chad Ford, The Athletic's John Hollinger, and Sports Illustrated's Jeremy Wu. Check the feed to catch up on past shows, and don't miss a pick. Make sure to subscribe to Locked On NBA today. Today's show here on Locked On Heat is a rather unpredictable one, but I get the feeling there's going to be a lot of that going around the NBA in the next couple of weeks. Reports were made by different sources that Danilo Gallinari, a free agent who played last season on the Oklahoma City Thunder, is the priority for the Miami Heat in free agency. So to help me break down what it means for both teams is Locked On Thunder host Rylan Stiles. How are you doing, Rylan?
I'm doing good. I'm going to get bunkered down and wait out this week of what should be a fun week for NBA fans. I mean, we've got the trade window officially opening here in a couple hours on Monday, and it'll just run through the weekend as free agency starts on Friday, and you got the draft in between. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Hanging in there. You broke it down for me already. But, yeah, the news that capped off the string of reports on Sunday came from ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski at the NBA transaction window for the trade. Kicks off Monday at noon. Trades and free agent agreements have already likely been agreed upon by most teams. And, of course, the Thunder are one of those teams that's already been linked. An interesting place for you, I think, because already we've heard that Chris Paul is rumored to be on his way to Phoenix as of last Friday. I talked about that in last week's show. Make sure you check out Locked On Thunder for his breakdown of the potential Chris Paul trade as well. But Woj tweets out that the Dennis Schroeder deal to the Lakers is taking place. And now, of course, Gallo seems on his way out. I guess I'll start off with this. It's no secret then that this could be what is considered a rebuilding year for the Oklahoma City Thunder, even though there's still a lot of talent on that team. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that this is a clear rebuild and really has been for quite some time. You really expect it to happen sooner than this, but after the way that they played in the first half of last season, we know that the trade fell through with Gallinari. They did try to make trades at the deadline to go straight away into a tank, but it had to delay until the offseason. Yeah, this is going to be a tanking, rebuilding season, trying to capitalize on your own picks and get you up in the top of the lottery for a Cade Cunningham or some of that elk in these next two drafts, which are stacked with talent. So you can control where your picks land. You can't control where Houston or the Clippers picks land or Miami's pick land, which the Thunder own also for next year, but you can control your own pick. And that's what they're going to try to do and let the chips fall where they may the rest of the way.
So what's the feeling there as you're seeing the most talented players on the team, with the exception of Shai Gilgeous and perhaps Steven Adams being traded elsewhere? Are you kind of like in a moment of despair here, or you saw this coming from so long now that you kind of become a little desensitized to the whole thing?
Yeah, you know, I think that everyone who's really been deep in the weeds of the team understands that this was coming, and the fact that, you know, they're entering their first rebuild in Oklahoma City. Remember, they built the first iteration of the Thunder with Kevin Durant and James Harden and Russell Westbrook. They did all that by losing in Seattle. So when they got to Oklahoma City, they only lost that first inaugural season in Oklahoma City, which netted them James Harden. And then from there, the rest is history. So they've been preparing here in Oklahoma City for a long time that this was going to be an off season and a couple seasons of losing for the first time, that you go into a season with the anticipation to lose. After the miraculous, you know, amazing season we just went on in 2019-2020, there were a few fans wondering if they could just run it back and try again, but it's clear that this team, even while as good as they played, how clutch they were throughout the regular season, they were still a first-round exit. They're still an old team. They still have to reposition. That way they can capitalize on Shai on his rookie deal and then soon-to-be rookie extension, Bazley on his rookie deal. Dort is still playing for peanuts, even with his new contract. So it's best for the team to move forward in this rebound. I think that everyone has kind of agreed to that. It'll be interesting to see if the Thunder can hold their stronghold globally, because one thing that drafting three straight MVPs does for you is it gets you that global footprint around the world. I don't know if that stays true here in the next few years as you're trying to lose, but I do think that the stronghold in Oklahoma, which you take away from the Dallas Mavericks whenever you move to Oklahoma City, I think that stays put.
Interesting. Well, on to Gallo. Had a big year there, obviously acquired from the Los Angeles Clippers. He played in 62 games, started all 62 during the regular season, averaged nearly 19 points, 5 rebounds, and 2 assists per game. Shot a blistering 40% from three-point range on 7 attempts per game. So how would you rate his regular season performance in Oklahoma City?
Regular season was A+. I mean, you just could not have asked for anything better than what Gallo gave you in his 62 games. They did a great job of managing him and not letting him play back-to-backs and keeping his body right. And because every time he played, he was electric. I mean, he was, you know, better than expected, I think. I mean, you headed into last season, you just trade your franchise cornerstone, the face of your franchise, Russell Westbrook. You trade him away. You get Chris Paul back, who at that time had a very negative reputation. And you're still, if you weren't really watching those Clippers teams, you're still kind of unsure even about Shea. And then all of a sudden, everything falls into place for Oklahoma City. And this has been a calendar year here since they traded for Chris Paul. It's been a calendar year of just everything going right for the Thunder, both in their own organization and outside their organization, with what's happening in Houston, what's happening in LA. This has just been, you couldn't have asked for anything better, including Gallinari's season, which was just awesome.
So those numbers dropped, unfortunately, in the playoffs, where he shot just 32% from three-point range. What was the key to taking him out of his efficiency there? Was he hurt? Was he just kind of uncomfortable in the bubble, or was it something that the Rockets were able to do in that 7-game series?
I struggle to give the Rockets credit for his drop-off because it was happening all bubble long. He really only had one good game in the bubble where you looked at it and said, okay, that's the Gallinari we've seen all season long. I mean, it could have been an injury. I just think it was a unique environment in the bubble, and he just did not – he didn't adapt to it very well. I think that he got his open looks like normal. He played his same role in the postseason, and his shots just didn't fall. I mean, it happened to Shea as well. Shea had an amazing regular season. You go to the bubble and he was just a shell of himself. He was indecisive. He didn't perform the way we saw in the regular season. It happened to Shea. It happened to Gallo. I think that just the bubble itself allowed some guys to flourish and allowed some guys to kind of get out of their comfort zone. And I think that that's what happens whenever you're a perimeter shooter like Gallinari. So much of that is just rhythm and feel. And whenever you sit at home for 3 months and then you go to an unfamiliar place, it might have affected that. I don't think that he was hurt. I just think that it was a poor showing in a small sample size.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Cause I mean, I think from Miami's perspective, you saw a lot of the guys continuing to find ways to work out. And a lot has been made about Jimmy Butler providing, you know, outdoor hoops for his teammates. And while I don't think those were used as much as it made for a great story, I think that would you have said that a lot of the Thunder players weren't able to work out, or perhaps for an international player like Gallo, was he not able to report to camp early enough to kind of get into that kind of shape and rhythm and things of that sort? Because obviously, look, Miami, conversely, like Duncan Robinson played exceptionally well. Tyler Hero was continuing to improve and work out during the hiatus from March to July when they were, you know, reconvening in Orlando. So, and he took a significant leap up in the bubble. So for Gallo, was it just a combination of all the opposite working against him?
Well, Gallinari actually just stayed in Oklahoma City throughout the entire hiatus, which I found to be very interesting that he just stayed in Oklahoma City, stayed in his normal home. And he worked out a ton. I mean, there was always Instagram videos of him. But once things started to loosen up even a little bit, he was out getting some conditioning in and doing all that stuff to where he lost weight during the hiatus, which was obviously not true for most of us in the hiatus, but he lost weight. He really improved his body, and it really got Thunder fans excited about the bubble. And then whenever he got there, he just forgot how to shoot. And it was just the shots weren't falling the same way they were falling in the regular season. I can't really quantify it other than, you know, it's just a different environment, but he never had any injury that he made public. And all you can say is that it just looks like he wasn't in rhythm.
Interesting. So for me, I think the takeaways are that he was at least able to stay fairly healthy and he could be a reliable scorer. I did not know that much about him having to sit out back to backs. And it seems like there was some kind of an active maintenance program there to try and keep him healthy and engaged and you know, able to contribute at a pretty high level. But I think the health concerns over the last few seasons certainly contributed to that. So it must have been very good to see him be as effective as he was. What were your takeaways about his health and everything else? Obviously, you think he had an incredible positive impact during the regular season.
Yeah, I think that he did a great job of managing and picking his spots, and he didn't just assign the front end or back end of a back-to-back for his off day. You know, it would depend on the matchups and everything like that. Mm-hmm. I think that the training staff did a great job of making sure his body was in check. And you have to remember, most of those back-to-backs happened prior to the trade deadline. Right. And so up until the trade deadline, it was looking as though Gallinari would not be here. So you had to manage his body. I'm not sure if he felt that way, but as an organization, the Thunder had to make sure nothing went wrong. If it was in their control to load manage him and not push his minutes and not do back-to-backs, they were going to do that because they were hoping to trade him at the deadline, which, you know, we've all seen by now that that's no secret. They wanted to trade him. And so I think that, you know, his body never failed. He never complained. He never had soreness, but they just rested him for load management reasons. And so I think that his body held up very well. I'm not sure if he'd have to do that next season, or if that was just a one season thing, or if that was an Oklahoma City thing, or if that was a him personally thing. But either way, it worked out really well for Oklahoma City. And again, I mean, keeping him healthy was a big step.
Do you think his contract year and the focus on that played a part in his improved play? I mean, I know injuries have probably been the biggest detriment to him being able to be an impact player consistently, but I mean, contract year upgrades have always been a reality in the NBA. Do you think it played a part in his performance?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to really get in the mind of someone else, but just given the fact that up until this offseason, you know, I should say the official offseason, not the hiatus, up until the official offseason here, he has always been saying he wants to get paid. He has always been saying that he cares about money and he cares about the contract, and that's part of why he's not in Miami already. Right. And then all of a sudden, once we hit this offseason, the first report that's out there from him on a radio interview is that He's not 20 years old anymore. He needs to go to a contender. He needs to win a championship. So the tune certainly changed. And if you want to win a championship, now you can't go get that max contract. Not that he would be a max player, but you can't go make your maximum amount of money that you could have on the open market normally. If you only want to go to a contender, it shrinks the amount of money you personally could make. So I think that throughout the season, he was focused on money, and then it got time to make a decision, and it truly got down to, what do I truly want? And from all accounts, he wants to win. So I think that the contract year did play into it, because this is a guy that's been injury prone. As you said, if he would have, you know, got hurt, God forbid, Oklahoma City, which luckily he did not, then that could have really derailed him in a off season where a lot of teams are trying to not spend money. And a lot of teams are trying to wait it out for that amazing free agency class next year. So I think that he took that into account and said, look, I cannot only be what I've been my entire career. I've got to be better to prove to them why you need to possibly forego next free agency class to sign me and improve your team right now with me. I can be that kind of player for you. So I think that added motivation for him did help him.
All right. Well, Ryland and I will break down the parameters of a potential deal with Miami and talk about some of the other suitors for Gallo's talents from around the league here on the number one Miami Heat podcast, for breaking down the latest rumors, news, and more.
If you want to try a delicious tasting protein bar, then Built Bar is the one for you. It comes in 18 amazing flavors, including 60 ones. Their 12 original flavors are all delicious, and they're all covered in 100% chocolate, so they're soft and easy to chew. You'll never know you're eating a protein bar. They're great for you, though. They're great for all sorts of health-conscious people, whether you want to lose, maintain weight, or just indulge in a delicious treat. Then trust me, you'll want to enjoy Built Bars. My wife and I both love them, the whole family. We've turned on our friends and family members as well, so you're going to really enjoy those. Again, they just come in so many delicious flavors. You can always just build a box with all of your favorites. And right now, if you go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get 20% off your next order. So use the promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com.
Stay up to date on the latest roster changes, as well as my coverage of the NBA draft. Subscribe to Locked On Heat on your favorite app to listen to podcasts and always get the newest episode. We talked about it a little bit. Miami has been interested in Gallo for some time now, with the reports that the deal had been close to acquire him last February, and a deal that would have sent Jay Crowder and others. I'm not sure what the parameters of that deal were. And of course, as you mentioned, it fell through at the 11th hour, reportedly because of Gallinari's interest in signing a multi-year extension that the Heat were unwilling to give. Were you surprised at that? Because you just kind of hinted at before we went to break that, you know, his priority has been to cash in on his free agency, and that he was not willing to make the accommodations to come to Miami or get paid, that he thinks he can get a lot more in this free agency period this time around.
Yeah, I was surprised that even in a situation like Miami, well, again, at the trade deadline, you could already tell, of course, they didn't make their finals run yet at that point, but you could tell they were a good team and they were going to be a good team. Right. To even not make accommodations for them or to even say that you only want to go there if you're going to get the extension or whatever, to have all those qualifiers in there was interesting to me because I thought that that was a now foregone conclusion that his top priority was financial. But that has changed since then. The package was good for Oklahoma City. That was going to be a big thing for Oklahoma City of, look, we do want to trade Gallinari. They tried, they failed. But yeah, I was surprised that it fell through. Not from the Heat's perspective. For the Heat, I do think that they should have, if it took eating into your cap space of next year and it took possibly losing out on the chance to get Giannis, if it took all of that, I also would not have made the Gallinari trade. Right. But so I think that the Heat did the right thing. But for him not to want to work with the Heat was interesting to me because the Heat have a great culture. They have a, you know, just on and off the court. They kind of fit what he wants to do. I was surprised that he did not take the Heat's offer more seriously, even if it meant possibly less money.
What was Miami offering that deal? It was Crowder and a three-team trade with Memphis, obviously. It would have worked out that way. And I don't know what else Miami would have thrown into the mix.
So there was a report from Bleacher Report that the trade was built around Kendrick Nunn, James Johnson, and Kelly Olynyk. I'm not sure what's correct in all of this. There was also the talk about, you know, rerouting Jay Crowder and things like that. But I've always, you know, seen reports of the Kendrick Nunn trade with Johnson and Olynyk involved.
Interesting. Yeah, because I know Johnson was eventually shipped to Minnesota. I thought he had been a part of the initial deal to acquire Crowder and Iguodala. I know Deion and Justice Winslow were sent there. I can't recall now. It seems like an eternity to go with everything that's taken place since then. But yeah, that's interesting. So Nunn would have been on his way out. I don't know. You probably would have been a little disappointed in the Kendrick Nunn experience, although I can understand why as a young player, he probably has some promise there, a lot more interesting than an older veteran like Jay Crowder or anything like that. But I didn't know Kelly Olynyk would have been included in that deal too. So, I mean, you know, I'm thinking about it now. I don't know how it could have worked out if the trade had been consummated, because it seems like while it's easy to say that Gallo is the better scorer, Crowder's defense and shooting was so key to Miami's finals run that although Gallo seems like a good fit, I think it's worked out pretty well for the Heat, to be honest with you. Like, they were able to capitalize on Crowder, keep him in that system where, you know, he was so switchable and everything else. And maybe if he's not included in that deal, maybe that's another story. Because it turns out, look, I mean, Olynyk didn't play much in the finals. He didn't play much in the playoffs at all. Kendrick Nunn didn't play any minutes, hardly. And so maybe if you had kept Crowder, maybe you would have been able to still pull off that trade and gotten a key score like Gallo. I don't know. It's interesting now to hear that the deal might have been a little different than what I had originally heard reported. So that's pretty cool. I mean, from the Thunder perspective, a little disappointing, I guess, because Gallo did not have the performance that you had expected him to have in the bubble. So that's, you know, not a great performance from him. But do you have any kind of inkling what his contract requirements would be this time around? Because, I mean, now I'm kind of like thrown off here because, you know, I didn't know it was so widely publicized that financial motivation was what was driving him this offseason. And then now to kind of do a 180 and say, it's more important for me to focus on winning and to, you know, lock down a championship at this point in my career. Do you take that seriously from him?
Yeah. I mean, to be fair to Gallo, he never made a statement from his own mouth about the financial thing. That was just what people have heard about him, that this season he was looking at it as this is his last and final opportunity to cash in. You would take that a step further and say he's primarily a shooter and primarily a three-point shooter, and that's really all he does for the most part. So for him, you can take this one last big contract and still on the back end of your career take less money after this next contract and still be on a contending team and be valuable to a contending team, because they're always going to need three-point shooters. But then whenever Gallo made his official statement and he put his name on the statement, then it became about contending. And I think that in this market, no team has salary cap besides losing ball clubs. Right. I think that the only thing for him is that he got to the postseason, albeit in the bubble, and he realizes that that's a lot more fun than even getting a huge payday in, say, Charlotte or, say, Atlanta. But Atlanta's trying to make some moves right now to try to contend. But still, it's a lot more fun to be in the mix. And I think that I would trust the latter report, this newest report of he realizes he's not 20 years old anymore. That's from his own mouth, that he wants to go try to chase a ring. So I'm going to take him at his word, especially with the rumors that we've heard.
So what do you think a deal takes to, in order to get it done? Because, I know there's some interest there from Miami's side. I don't know how widely – I mean, right now it seems like Gallo – I think the Heat are the odds-on favorites to land Gallinari, which is a little surprising because I didn't think he was that heavily the primary focus for the Heat. But it seems like maybe there's some mutual interest there. What do you think he's looking to get? Is it just a one-year deal? Does he understand that the need for Miami to maintain some salary cap flexibility the next season because of Giannis and everything else? Or I've heard some suggestions that maybe a mid-level exception would be enough to sign him outright. Or if it's a sign and trade, what kind of deal are we talking about here? Because that's I don't know how much money you think he's likely to make, but I didn't think the number was going to be that high. What do you think his contract requirements would be more or less?
Yeah, I think that a mid-level exception, I'd be pretty surprised about that. I would be shocked if he just went ahead and said, you know what, I'm only going to be a mid-level player. But I think that it would take a sign and trade to move him this offseason, which all parties want. He's already said that he wouldn't want to come back to Oklahoma City without Chris Paul. You can read through the tea leaves there that Chris Paul will not be back in Oklahoma City. So I think that, to me, I'm looking at this that it's either if he signs as a free agent, he's going to Phoenix. If he wants to go to contender, then it'll have to be a sign and trade. But I think that the only worry for Miami or for any team that truly wants him is Phoenix, because Phoenix would still have some flexibility even after a Chris Paul trade. Gallo likes playing with Chris Paul. I don't see a better option out there for Phoenix than Gallinari if they still want to improve more than just Chris Paul. So I think that Phoenix is the only contender to sign him from a free agency outright standpoint. And then Miami, Dallas, those teams are trying to get in the mix on a sign and trade. For the contract, I think that he's more open now to than he was at the deadline, because after the CBA changes, the pandemic, all that stuff was not known at the trade deadline. I think that he's more flexible in saying, look, I'll try to make any number work for me that both benefits my bank account, but also benefits my upcoming team. And I think that his number will not be as high as we thought it would be at the deadline.
So is there any possibility of the Suns pulling like a multi-trade or like a trade there with for Paul and Gallinari and doing some kind of sign and trade there? Would it be two separate deals? Do you think, has there been any kind of talk about whether or not those two players would be linked on their way to Phoenix as far as a potential trade is concerned?
For a trade, I would be kind of shocked, because to me, the big piece around the Chris Paul trade is the 10th pick. It's rumored that the 10th pick will go to Oklahoma City. And I would be shocked if Oklahoma City does not want to get that 10th pick officially known as theirs by the draft, because I think that they want to use that 10th pick and possibly trade up even further than 10. There's been rumors that they want LaMelo Ball. There's been rumors they want to get up to number one. With their draft capital they have both now and in the future, I think that that's possible. If those reports are accurate, I think that's possible. And you can't trade Gallinari until Friday. You know, you can't even have the negotiations with Gallinari until Friday. So to me, that kind of rules out the whole sign and trade with Chris Paul, unless there is just some underbelly of the NBA world we don't know about, where there's just five different handshake agreements that somehow still allow the Thunder to trade up from 10. If the Thunder don't want to trade up from 10, and that's a bad report from ESPN, then you can start to make those kind of, you know, listen, Suns, you're going to pick our player at 10. Just give him to us on Friday or Saturday whenever we swap you with Chris Paul and Gallinari. That could happen. But if they want to move up from 10, I don't see it happening. There hasn't really been too much talk about pairing those two and handcuffing them in a trade to Phoenix, because I think that Phoenix can do it without the Thunder and without giving up an extra asset. Because right now for Phoenix, you're looking at getting Chris Paul for Ricky Rubio, Kelly Oubre, and the 10th pick. You would have to give something else up to also get Gallinari, especially the way that the sign and trade market has kind of flourished for him, where you now have a suitor in Miami, you have a suitor in Dallas, and then Phoenix. Whereas for Phoenix, you can just trade for Chris Paul, still have enough cap space to sign Gallinari without involving Oklahoma City, which I think that's what they would do if they did make the trade for Chris Paul and if they did want to pursue Gallinari.
Is the Paul trade, in your opinion, then, is it a kind of a done deal that it'll take place within the next couple of days?
Well, you know, I think that the Chris Paul trade is going to be done before the draft. Who is it going to be to? I still don't know. Brian Windhorst has said it's an above 50-50 chance it happens with Phoenix. Zach Lowe on his podcast with Kevin Clark was just throwing out there that Sam Presti is trying to flip Kelly Oubre as if it was a done deal. Now, I think that that's just a slip of the tongue from Zach Lowe. He forgot to put in there hypothetically, or if it happened, they would be trying to flip Kelly Olynyk. But it seems like around the NBA, we're kind of just biding our time until 12 Eastern today, whenever Woj can officially say, here's what's happening with Chris Paul. It seems like everyone kind of knows the deal. And if you're Phoenix, you kind of already got not only your fan base excited, but you've kind of already got Devin Booker excited about Chris Paul. So you've kind of nuked your leverage and you've put yourself in a position where you have to get Chris Paul or you have to get somebody else. Because if you don't, I think that that really puts Devin Booker in a bad position and in a distasteful position with Phoenix. So I think that that the Chris Paul trade gets done by the draft. And that's how you start to hear those reports of the Thunder wanting to move up, because the Thunder cannot move up from 25 to one, because that would take your entire, you know, that would take all of your future assets to do that. That's too many spots. They can move up though from 10 to one. That becomes a lot more realistic. So it all ties together to me. And I think that Chris Paul is gone by Wednesday.
All right. Well, we'll talk about some of the potential trade scenarios to acquire Gallinari in Miami. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Just a reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskHelloHeat. Be sure to please subscribe to the show and leave a review. Here we are talking to Ryland Stiles, the host of Locked On Thunder. And of course, Danilo Gallinari is the subject of this conversation, perhaps on his way out, likely to, I don't know, who knows, Miami, Phoenix. It could be a lot of different teams. And perhaps we'll get into some of those other trade scenarios later on. But as far as Miami is concerned, and if its sign and trade deal is in the works, what kind of deal would you like to see play out with Miami? I don't think that there's a lot of assets there. I think obviously the number 20 pick is on the table. Probably a combination of other young players, perhaps a Kelly Olynyk as well seems likely. What's your perfect scenario for the Thunder?
You know, I would be interested in what the return would be. I think that the ball is kind of in Miami's court a little bit with this trade, because if Gallinari wants to go somewhere, the Thunder are going to make it happen. The Thunder have long been a family-oriented, loyal organization. I mean, they're giving Chris Paul approval to go talk to teams and kind of create his own destination. And they did the same thing with Russell Westbrook. And of course they wouldn't take a worse deal, I don't think, to accommodate Gallinari. But if Gallinari really wants to go to Miami, I think that the trades themselves will be comparable between Miami, Dallas, and whoever else jumps in the mix, to where if he wants to go to Miami, he's going to go to Miami. I think that what really you can look at here for the Thunder's perspective is the 2021 Miami pick. There's still a protection on that pick. Could you, if you're Miami, could you get Gallinari for simply saying that is now an unprotected draft pick, and then throw in, you know, some, would you do Kendrick Nunn? Would you be willing to again give up Kendrick Nunn for Gallinari, who fell out of the rotation for the bubble? And you know why he did more than I do, but I just noticed he wasn't really playing that much in the bubble. Would you throw in Kendrick Nunn, lift the protections, and get Gallinari in a sign and trade? And then of course you still have to make the contracts match, but that would just be the assets the Thunder get back.
I think the Heat certainly see themselves as potential title contenders. They don't really have a lot of value in draft picks historically. They always use them more as assets and trades and things of that sort. So I think they would be more than happy to lift the protections up next year, especially considering how well they performed this past season and knowing that the window for title contention is much shorter and has to be included within the 3 years that Jimmy Butler has left on his contract. They don't want to make the same mistake that they've made previously as far as not being able to maximize the best, most efficient time to get a title for any one player. They've made that mistake with Dwayne Wade. They don't want to do it with Jimmy while he's still somewhat at his peak. And so I think when you start to hear about Miami wanting to add another player or another superstar like Giannis or anybody else that fits along that same category, those concerns are real for them. And I think if they see that Gallinari is an essential piece in helping them get to that next level, I'm sure they have no problem with dismissing any kind of protections that they currently have on that pick so that they'll trade it away for that key player. As far as Nunn is concerned, I think he's still valued around the organization. They like his work ethic. They like the fact that he's able to he's able to respond to challenges, and he's always been able to step up offensively. There's just so much limitations to his game as far as everything else. He's only a scorer. He's looking to score first, last, and always. He's not a passer or a playmaker yet. He's also not a great defender at the point of attack. So, I mean, if you're willing to include Nunn in a deal, you're going to have to shore up your guard rotation either through the draft or via free agency. So they have options, I guess, but primarily I don't think he doesn't have a lot of value. His contract's not a huge one anyway. So, I mean, it would be, he's not viewed as a kind of asset that is a restriction to any potential trade. So I think they'd be happy moving Nunn, lifting those restrictions at the very least. And then as far as salaries are concerned, it would probably take a Kelly Olynyk. So, I mean, I guess that would be the framework of any deal. Olynyk, Nunn, lifting those protections. And if Miami can keep their 20th pick in this year's draft, that would seem like a win-win for the Heat, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, and just for the record, the protections on the 2023 pick, which for the Thunder, you'd wonder, you know, if there's any Thunder fans listening to this, you would wonder why the Thunder would do that. Well, look what's happening with the Clippers. Look what's happening with the Heat. When the Thunder made that Clippers trade, with Paul George, Clipper fans and kind of some NBA fans just around the league were saying, well, how valuable will 20, you know, picks in the 20s will be, or 28 or 30 pick will be. Well, look what's happening right now. There's a possibility here that the Clippers lose Kawhi or Paul George and they become a way worse team. Look what's happening in Houston right now. Houston just gave you four picks for the benefit of Russell Westbrook. And now they're going to trade Russell Westbrook. And there's just a report as we're talking about this, that, you know, James Harden is looking around the league and is looking at the Nets for a possible destination to be traded to. And now the Rockets, according to Woj, are staying pat with, we want to run it back with Harden. But Harden himself has been looking around the league and has talked about Brooklyn and reuniting with Kevin Durant. So, I mean, the Rockets are in disarray after those picks were looked at as unvaluable by Daryl Morey. The Clippers are uncertain. So while I do think the Heat will still be a very good team, and it's not in Pat Riley's MO, and it's not in the Heat's culture to be a bad team in 2023, you just never know what can happen. Could they be a lottery team in 2023 if certain things go certain ways and guys get disgruntled? Sure. So make sure that that pick is unprotected, because for Gallinari, I think that the value at most is a future first round pick. And so you already have the Heat's future first round pick. Just make sure it conveys to you, which you automatically do without protections.
No, yeah, I even with the change in year, sorry, I still think I don't think the Heat actually care. Like, I mean, specifically if they're able to land Adetokounmpo next season, you're talking about a 2-year mm-hmm. gap there in between when that pick would be conveyed. I'm sure they still think that there would be a championship window if you have Bam Adebayo, Tyler Hero still on his rookie deal, and of course, Jimmy Butler towards the end of his career, perhaps, or at least in another deal. I think they still think that there's a legitimate title window over the next 3, 4, 5 years. And so that pick is certainly less valuable in Miami's view, even less valuable than it normally is. Again, this is a team that does not really build the draft. They've gotten lucky over the last couple of seasons with Tyler Hero and Bam Adebayo. I mean, I guess you can weigh whether or not it's luck or whether or not it's just great scouting, but they always build by developing their players internally. They always land free agents, or at least they're always in talks to land free agents. So I think the draft is a great way to build a team, but from Miami's perspective, they never really used that as the foundation to build their squad. So I think they would be more than happy to make that accommodation. But anything else as far as like what Miami might be able to include, what would you think would be another sweetener for a deal with Miami?
Well, let me ask you this just hypothetically here. There was the report earlier this weekend that Dallas really wants Gallinari. And you know what happens when Mark Cuban really wants somebody. Mark Cuban is no stranger to Miami, trust me. You know what happens when they really want somebody. And if it's looking like he might lose out on the free agency, and with Dallas's history of wanting to go after the big fish in free agency and always swinging and always missing, maybe Mark Cuban, when it really comes down to it, views Gallinari as a realistic option and wants to improve the team right away and just worry about next year later. I don't think he should do that. I think that he should wait it out and see what they can do next free agency. But let's just say he actually wants Gallinari and he wants to go all in for it. That drives up the price tag of Gallinari anytime you have more suitors. So just hypothetically speaking, what if you gave up also, and I think that I know your answer because of just what you just said, but what if I told you had to give up Nunn and the 2022 first round pick? And so then Oklahoma City gets two of your picks in that case, because they already do have the 2023 pick. They get two of your picks, and then they get Nunn as well for Gallinari.
Is that possible, though? I mean, can you throw in another pick there? Or isn't the Stepien rule something that prevents you from being able to include multiple or consecutive first-round picks?
Yes. I was looking at the NBATrade.com website that everyone goes to, and it says it is possible. Again, okay, it's just a website, so it might not be possible, but it says it's possible. If not, you can, you know, extend it all the way out to 2025. Sam Presti is perfectly fine with getting future draft picks. But what if I told you I could, you had to throw in one more draft pick in the mix?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's just my baseline response when it comes to the draft is that Miami doesn't view that as the most essential way to building a contender team, and especially if they have, you know, the capacity to lure players like they historically have. I think they'll still see that as a, and all, and a lot of it depends on, I think Bam Adebayo is the key for that, any kind of roster building. As much as there's the potential of luring a Giannis Antetokounmpo and the fact that you already have Jimmy Butler on your team, Bam is the team's centerpiece moving forward as far as their best recruiting tool and things of that sort. Come play with Bam Adebayo because he's the kind of the center that, that this league is revolving around now more than ever. And I think they still see him as being a fixture on the roster in 2025. And if that's the case, they can still see themselves being building a contender around Bam. And so while there is always, you know, you never can get too comfortable or rest on your laurels and things of that sort, I think they'd still be willing to include a trade if necessary. Another pick if necessary. I don't know. Is there another team? You mentioned Phoenix before. Is there another team that you think has a better potential package to acquire a player like Gallinari in a sign and trade?
No, I really threw that out there just because I think that's the most it'll take is an additional first round pick. I think that the baseline package, if there was no other suitors and this did not come true, would be, okay, let's take a flyer on Kendrick Nunn. That's our thank you for making this work because you don't have cap space. And then lift the protections on a pick you don't care about anyway. That in all likelihood would not be a lottery pick, but not only could stars get disgruntled and demand a trade, stars can get hurt. And I mean, what if Butler goes down and Giannis goes down and you're left with only Bam? That'd still be a good team. But would that be an official lock it in playoff team? That would depend on what happens around the league. So I think that the starting package, if there's no leverage or there's no, you know, debate of a third team getting in the mix like Dallas, then it would just be lift the protections, give us Kendrick Nunn. If Dallas somehow drove up the market here, then you could do, don't touch 2023. We'll risk it, but give, you know, 2022 or 2025, however the stepping rule will work out that way. Again, this is just based on a trade machine website. And then also Kendrick Nunn. I think that would be the absolute most you have to pay. And Thunder fans might not want to hear that. But I mean, again, Thunder fans are somehow upset about a Dennis Schroeder trade today that got you back a first round pick for Dennis Schroeder, who you got for Carmelo Anthony and 2 second round picks. So I think that Thunder fans will have to relax a little bit on what the expectation is for Gallinari. And at best, you're looking at Kendrick Nunn, a nice flyer prospect, and a couple first round picks or a first round pick.
Yeah. And any interest in Kelly Olynyk there? I mean, he's got an expiring deal at the end of the next season. So would there be any kind of potential there as far as a fit or as a backup center or maybe even as a four playing alongside Adams?
Yeah, I think that Olynyk as a player is a nice little player. Now, this is where it gets interesting for the Heat. I don't see a lot of long-term contracts that they'd really want to move off of. Now, Oklahoma City has said, and reportedly they do not want to get into the game of taking on long-term money, but I just personally refuse to think that the Thunder are that short-sighted because no free agent will go to Oklahoma City. You're not trying to sign free agents in Oklahoma City for at least 3 or 4 years, and they wouldn't go there anyway. So if you can take on a long-term contract that, say, Dallas does not want anymore, and you can facilitate it that way to where you take on DeLon Wright's contract, you take on somebody else who they want to get rid of, and they'll give you another asset, an additional asset, that's where the Heat can get behind the eight ball. But if the reports are true and Oklahoma City does not want to take on long-term money, then I think that Miami really has the comparable package to anyone around basketball. That's kind of Gallinari's value. That's been from Zach Lowe. That's been from The Athletic. But his value is, okay, possibly a first-round pick. And you get a first-round pick in Kendrick Nunn. Who's going to do better than that? I mean, who's going to have a better flyer prospect than Kendrick Nunn?
All good points. Appreciate you taking the time to explain it. How do you see it playing out? If you had to make a guess right now, do you see something working out or by the end of this week potentially? And if so, would it be with Miami or any other team that you think is on the horizon?
You know, I think that when it's all said and done, Gallinari will end up in Miami. I really do. I'm interested in that because it seems like Miami's in really, really good position to get Giannis next offseason. So it's going to have to take maybe front loading, back loading, whatever it may be to ensure you can still do that. But I think that as long as Miami can figure out a way to maneuver a contract and still be able to sign Giannis next offseason, they're going to do it. I mean, the asking price is not going to be too high for Miami. As you said, they do not value picks as an organization. And why would they? Because barring injury, those picks shouldn't have traditional value.
All right. Well, thank you so much. That's Ryland Stiles. He's the host of Locked on Thunder. Make sure you stay tuned to that show. Remember to get your team every day just by asking your smart device to play Locked on Heat and Locked on Thunder as soon as you get in your car. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you as always for your support.